The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbess of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from The Hidden Lamp. Stories from awakened women through the centuries. Ling Zhao's helping. One day, Layman Pong were out selling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, the layman stumbled and fell. When Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side and threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping," replied Ling Zhao. "Luckily, no one was looking," remarked the layman. That's it. One day, Layman Pong and his daughter Ling Zhao, you can put yourself into the story and imagine them. They were coming down. They were selling bamboo baskets. They had all their baskets coming down off a bridge. And the father fell. He stumbled and fell. And when she saw this, when Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side, threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping," replied Ling Zhao. "Luckily, no one was looking." I worked with this before, but as koans go, they keep giving. As we grow in our practice and our experiences, we can keep going over teachings, and they deepen for us. We have new perspectives, new insights. I thought this one really kind of addressed right relationship and expressing gratitude. How do you fall? How do I fall? And what is helping? How and when is falling helping? Some of the questions that might come out of this, how do we fall down to the ground of our being, the fundamental that all this rests upon? I had spoken of, when I was working on thought of Yukon and all the, and how we had to practice and fall with him, along with the caretakers, the caregivers, the family, the hospice workers, and the bumpiness of the endeavor, meeting our opinions and our fears, our grasping, and finding harmony together, listening to him. What did he need? How is he going? And of course, in this city, there's a constant meeting of someone on the ground, maybe asking for money or for some food, some help, maybe just hello, just to notice each other. Is there something I can give? What do I do? How might I be ignoring the person on the ground? Maybe it's a family member or a dear friend that's ill or depressed. Maybe we lie next to them and comfort them. Maybe it's a child on the ground crying about something, and we go down next to them and ask, "What's the matter?" What's the matter? And as we practice the Buddha Dharma, we realize that we're not separate from anything. There's no way to be. Our connection with everyone and everything is fact. It's a fact. You may not recognize it, but it's true. And we're studying the Bodhisattva's four methods of guidance, way to benefit living beings. And he expresses, because of giving, we have this present life. Because of the power of giving, we come into this present life. And these four methods are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. So tuning into the countless ways that we're falling with each other, day after day. How is this? I was thinking of Sujata. We wouldn't have a Buddha if it wasn't for Sujata, right? She passed, she was on her way to the market and passed this person, emaciated, on the ground, very close to death. And immediately she went down. Here, have this bowl of rice milk pudding. Take some food. Ending his 6 years of asceticism. It said he could barely move. It's written that she said, "You cannot find truth and the way without a living body to experience that." And in those words, she imparted wisdom that guided Siddhartha to realize his goal in both his goal. In Bodh Gaya, where we were, there's a Sujata temple on the place where she supposedly gave him this rice porridge. So a little bit about the Pang family. They were an enlightened group of householders. Mother, father, daughter, Ling Zhao, and there was a brother too, where there wasn't much about him other than he cultivated the land and grew vegetables. Right? Right? Yeah. No small potatoes. As they're getting enlightened, he's feeding them. And it's said that they lived very modestly. In fact, they put all their possessions into a boat, most of them, I guess, and rowed the boat out into the middle of the lake and sunk it, all their possessions. I wonder how that would fly today. Is that like dumping in the ocean? I doubt there was much plastic in that, but mostly organics, perhaps. But this family was deeply committed to the Buddha way, to each other. Their exchanges are full of delight and Dharma dancing with each other, testing each other, humor, insight. And during their lifetime, there was a kind of a revolution in Chan practice, that it was beginning to be understood that deep realization was just as possible in a lay, home-dwelling life as it was in a monastic life. So you had that encouragement way back. And it wasn't just for men, but for all beings. So Mr. and Mrs. Pang were enlightened, and Ling Zhao, the daughter in this case, we call her Pang Ling Zhao Dai Shi, as we chant. Her name means shining spirit. So she's in our list of ancestors, and if you go in the Buddha Hall, you'll see a painted portrait of her on the ancestors' wall. And they all practiced bodhisattva vows. All practiced saving living beings. That was their dedication. And when the Buddha was alive, he made rules, of course, we know, of living together that only emerged when something needed to be handled. They had to think, okay, this is what we're going to do. And some guidance or a rule emerged. And whenever we have a group of people living together, there needs to be guidelines to live in harmony for the health and the growth of a community. And then several decades after the Buddha's death, there was a council meeting, mostly of monastics and some nuns, to see what practices were to be continued. And the Vinaya was formed. No, not at that time. Yeah, the Vinaya was formed, which is a very long list of hundreds of rules, like what should the diet be, what should the schedule be, how should we handle money. And then almost a century later, a second council, and that had a more diverse group of people, and that was merchants, artists, householders, and those with families, monks and nuns. And there was a more developed presentation of a spirit and practice called the Bodhisattva practice. And the basic idea of a Bodhisattva practice, Bodhi meaning to awaken, and a sattva is a being. So a Bodhisattva is not just a being who is awakening, but also a being awakening other beings and being awakened by other beings. And the basic premise of Bodhisattva practice, as we know, is the fact of our deep relatedness. And if we are deeply drenched with one another, how can we be free if, say, people are in prison, starving, greatly suffering? How can we really be free? How can we really be free? Really? If that's happening. And this is never a solo project, though we are alone. It's like if we're heading for the door to do our practice and we turn around and we're like, oh, there's all these beings behind us. Where do I think I'm going? So Ling Xiaopang and her dad were committed to Bodhisattva practice and made this vow to include other people. Sometimes I think we forget this vow, I forget this vow, because we're suffering a lot, sometimes so much, that we forget about others. And it said that Mr. Pang and his daughter were said to be inseparable and loved each other so much. And they always loved being together. So we can imagine them together on the way to the market selling bamboo baskets. During the week, they probably made the baskets and then they went to the market on the weekends to sell them. And they're on the way to the market and the father falls and she leaps and lands right next to him. I saw you fall. I'm helping. Now, is it a literal story? Doesn't matter. Is it a metaphor? It doesn't matter. How does she respond to the situation? Seems like without flinching, without hesitation, completely without self-concern, kindness. Doesn't need a badge. Just creatively to what's happening. It's funny. It's playful, actually. How is it when we go to a person without any calculation at all? When I was working on this, we were on the fourth floor, Yunin and I, of the temple, and it's like everything all at once. The buzzer rang, the phone rang, workmen were coming, and I realized my head was cold, so I needed my hat. So I turned quickly, and my sandal got stuck on the top step, and I fell on my knees, no hands, just fell on my knees. And it was like hitting every funny bone, right? So I just started writhing, and Yunin's like, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Just get the door, just get the door, I'm fine." And I'm like, "Oh my God." And I was just like rolling around up there. My eyes are shut. It was like excruciating. And after a while it was abating. I was just laying there and I opened my eyes and the two cats were right there on my level doing that thing they do, like, what? So kind, so supportive, so reassuring. So on the other side of the story, how about the father's response when his daughter threw herself beside him on the ground? Luckily, no one was looking. Did you ever have that feeling? Her father allows it. He takes it in. He receives it. He receives her help. Does he get a little self-conscious? Luckily, no one was looking. Is that being self-conscious? I love this part of this story because it gives us a little tilt here, a little more reality. A place where I feel, at least I feel, when someone wants to help, we can feel a little bit ashamed. Brush it off. I'm okay. I had a therapist that I worked with, and every time I said, I'm okay, she would go like, "Let's take a look at I'm okay." And I'd be like, "I'm not okay." Dido would say, "Up to here, right? I'm okay. There it goes. So, who is this no one? No one was looking. Luckily, no one was looking. Perhaps Mr. Pong is showing us he's not worried. He's not worried about some third person judging, monitoring, distancing from this interaction. Luckily, no one was looking. That the one who is looking, fortunately, is him. How free and generous it is when we're not keeping score, watching. When no one is looking. Trungpa said, few of us are ever alone. We always have some part of us like back here, talking about us over here. Never alone. You're doing all right. Okay, do this. I was back there. Never alone. Someone who's watching needs to what? Become whole? Need to become this or that? Early in my practice, when I would go in with my breath practice, Dido would repeat to me, "No zendo, no monitors, no watcher. Let go of the watcher. Just fall away." I've told this story before, but it had such an impact on me. There was a session in July, super hot, and I was working on something with Dido was at that time, and I kept getting wrung out with go deeper, go deeper. And at first it was exhilarating and exciting. Okay, go deeper. And then I was starting to get really upset. I went sour. And it started to become very painful. And I was like, I can't go any deeper. I don't know what that is. Just so many, no, not that, no. Go try again. So I went pounding up the hill with my backpack on and all my books hanging low in the back. And I was cutting through what used to be the basketball court. There was a little area there of woods. And it was that phenomena where there's nothing there and someone trips you. Like, I swear a leg came out and tripped me. And I went down so fast that I didn't have my hands off my backpack. I was still holding it. So it was boom, right on my face, mouth filled up with dirt. And the first thing I did, believe it or not, I popped up to see if anyone was looking. That was the first thing on my mind. I couldn't believe it now looking back. And then I laid down. And then the cry came. Oh my God. The deep cry. Just all the tension, all the holding, all the wanting and trying, just sobbing. And then I started to think about what happened, and it turned into hysterics. I started laughing so hard. I was just hysterical. And then I cleared up a little, wiped my snot and all that, and the peat moss. And I looked and I saw the edge of a pot, the lip. And I was like, huh. And so I took my finger and I was doing this and pulling, and it wasn't coming out. So now I'm up and I got a stick and I'm digging, and up pops a whole cup. And on the cup was a decal of the monastery. And it said, Camp Wapanachi. I found a cup from the 60s, whole. So when you're down, don't get up too fast. There's a couple little treasures down there. I'm okay. Don't rush. Yeah. What do I do when no one is watching me? What do you do? For me, when I take in someone's support, it changes how I view the world, changes how I view myself. But also, when we fall down, we can really be at odds with ourselves. And when we're at odds with ourselves, it's hard to take in someone else's support, let alone ask for it and receive it. What is at odds with ourselves? We don't want to ask. We don't want to receive. We're at odds with ourselves. We're not used to it. And I like this story because it's not about an individual having an awakening experience. It's relational, right? They're waking each other up. And this happens in families or communities, right? We don't tend to think of our families in this way. And I was reflecting on my own. I was like, yep, this happens. So maybe there's one person in the family who really inspires us. Or we idealize them. But really, every member of our family has woken us up, is waking us up. Whatever we call family, whatever it may look like, a community, a sangha, the people who have healed us, the people who have hurt us, the people we can easily forgive, the people we can't forgive. They're all offering us something all the time. And we're always waking up together. Daido Roshi used to say, if one person in the family is practicing, then everyone is, but they don't know it. Ling Zhao jumps and comes to the same level as her dad. We can bring the circumstances of our life to the path to study the self. That's how it wakes up. That's how we wake up. Have you ever been introduced to a kid and you go to shake their hand and say, hi, what's your name? And they turn or they back up. They go behind the leg of an adult, very reluctant to speak to us. But if we kneel down at their eye level, just see if they're more willing to connect. So we have to be that little kid again. What would we like? How would we like to be met? Do we remember that feeling of somebody up there wanting to go, hi, little kid, how are you? In my experience, then, they'll follow you around for the rest of the night. My friend sent me a video of her grandson, who's just beginning to walk. So little Ronan is still couch surfing, but every so often he'll push off and there's a few, yeah, and then boom, he goes down. So he ventures away from safety of the sofa. He moves out into open space of the living room, and then eventually he would fall down. And I watched her and she just fell right down with him, just smiling and giggling. It's just what she did. She didn't plan it out. It was automatic. Something happening together. She let herself fall without thinking about it until the little one was ready to get up and try again. And it made me think of the number of times that with friends, family, kids who have fallen, were falling, and how many times I would offer advice, try to fix, worse, judging them out of my own discomfort, uncertainty, preservation, whatever, protection, feeling it at odds with myself, with a part of myself. And just constantly practicing that shift to release that wanting to do that, to fall with them, not control. What is our immediate response? We do learn things from our reactions. In Dharma practice, we speak of non-duality. The basic aspect of non-duality is to be in our activity fully. It was spoken of yesterday by Hogan, no separate you. You're the whole thing. No one's standing behind you, talking to yourself about what you're doing. We studied the undivided life, the undivided life. So, compassionate action is said to be non-dual, wholehearted, not separating in activity. When we're moving and acting with our whole being, eating with our whole being, it's possible. All alone. And it's impermanent. Doesn't guarantee that it'll work. And if it doesn't work, we try something else. But the point is to be fully in our activity. Ling Jiao sees her father falling, and he says, "What are you doing?" And she says, "I saw you fall." Fully present in her experience, right? There isn't another one of her having the experience. And Joan Sutherland commented on this in the Hidden Lamp. And she says, Ling Jiao's action obliterates the idea that there is a helper and a helped. She says, compassion isn't a commodity we deliver, but a commitment to help liberate the intimacy already inherent in any situation. What is most intimate? The koan suggests that we ask. Usually the most intimate response to another's difficulty begins with the willingness not to flee. Fleeing can take the form of abandoning the situation, and it can also mean escaping into helping, into a whole constellation of ideas about what ought to happen. Intimacy is being willing to stay and accompany and listen, to be vulnerable and surprised and flexible. It's a willingness to fall with someone else and see what becomes possible when we do. Shugen Roshi once asked me, working on something, do we ever know if we're really helping someone? Do you know if you're ever helping someone? In our intimacy with Zazen, we can see where we make things abstract and go to ideas, concepts. We're just sitting there, drawing from habits of memory, consciously and unconsciously, maybe mostly unconsciously, and how that covers up that intimacy. And why mindfulness is essential. Remembering to keep coming back, releasing the thinking, the discriminating, standing back, witnessing. Uncover the intimacy that's always been there. Closing the gap, forgetting the self. Intimacy isn't something we try to create. We don't try to pull it out of a situation or pull it out of a relationship or achieve in a relationship. It's already here. It's the ground of our being before we start to split things apart. And the way we recover that is, as she says, don't abandon the situation we're in. Don't abandon yourself. Practice not separating from the changing conditions. Because we too are the same. We're moving, unfixed, uncertain. So we practice that, moving along together with ourself. The bodhisattva realizes there is no path. The path is just to keep training and practicing because we don't know how we'll be called to serve. And hopefully this motivates us as bodhisattvas to get up in the morning. Right? Isn't it exciting wondering, how will I serve today? wake up like that. How will I serve today? I have no idea. No idea what to do. It's like when we have a friend in the hospital and we've been called to come right away. And we're a little or a lot nervous, might not know what to do when we get there, what to say. We don't know what's up. I'm sure many of us have had this experience. What do? Show up. We just show up. See what's needed. And showing up is our self-care. That's self-care. We just do all we can to not make things worse. If there's one takeaway today, perhaps a bodhisattva vow means to make a vow not to make things worse. And you might think, wow, that's really setting a low bar. But I'm telling you, try it for a week. Don't make anything worse for 1 week. Yeah, it's a good challenge. Practice is a refuge. And it's important to practice and have a path, a place to come home to. Not as time off, we know that, but as a place to get calm, still, and learn how to experience and work, transform our reactions, our reactivity. And then we're a different kind of friend, a different kind of child, a different kind of parent, teacher, a different colleague at work. And when we practice, everyone we come in contact with does and is drawn to goodness. We're drawn to goodness, to clarity, to steadiness. And people are falling down and are going to fall down. It's not abstract. It's not like looking from a distant window. There's a lot of people who are going to need help and support and do. And as practitioners, we have something real to offer. We can see what's arising in our mind, practice and stabilize our ship. Can't control the waters. But we can stabilize our ship. We can practice mindfulness of breathing. We can know we are breathing in. And we can know we are breathing out. We can free our thoughts. We can question our thoughts. We can make space. We can contact our vast nature. We can practice when to know being with others, when not to, how to listen, feel what it's like to feel the heart open, feel what it's like when we're closing down, know what that is. No, we don't know. Perfect. Yeah. There's a definition I found of compassion as coming alongside. That's what Ling Zhao does, coming alongside. It's what we can do. And we keep offering our bodhisattva spirit as we chant, sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them, to serve them. And then we spend the rest of our life leaning in and learning what that is. Sentient beings are numberless, and we're going to serve them. Lean in. Learn what it is. Dada used to say, if you're wearing a rock suit, You're wearing a shingle that says, at your service. And he says, if you want to save someone, you need to be prepared to be saved yourself. If you want to save someone, you need to be prepared. We need to be prepared to be saved ourselves. Pang's daughter falls down next to her father. She doesn't fix the situation. She helps him fall. She falls right next to him. That's how it is. We fall down together. We fall down together. Falling shows us something. Life's uncertain, unknowable, unpredictable. As Ling Zhao helps her father fall, she falls with him. It's an intimate fall. Falling into awakening, flowing together. Layman Pang and his daughter, Ling Zhao, were selling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, the layman stumbled and fell. When Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side and threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping." Luckily, no one was looking.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.